Hi, with Truth News Radio Australia, beaming out to you on the 31st of May, 2014. A great pleasure to be with you today. My name's Hereward Fenton, and for the next 2 hours we'll be exploring some little-known areas of truth and justice, but ones that are extremely important for humanity. For the quest we are on is to raise awareness of things that have been suppressed by the establishment, by the media, and by those who hold too much power in our society. And we do this by virtue of the amazing medium that is the internet and the blogosphere and the podosphere, the realm of alternative news broadcasts. And we attempt to do our bit. We make whatever small impact we can to bring awareness to people and to also encourage those who already are aware to feel that that they are understood. A large part of our effort is helping to establish the normalcy of our alternative points of view, for people to feel comfortable with having points of view which are at odds with the establishment. And I like to bring many guests on this show who have a very high degree of credibility, who are well established in their fields, professional people, so that those listening can feel that their point of view is not restricted to some kind of fringe, marginal aspect of society, which is generally the way these things are framed and the way the hit pieces in the media are always framed. It makes it look as if those who have questions, for example, about September 11, must be some kind of weirdo, fringe, marginal people. It's not the case. The vast bulk of people who are active in the 9/11 truth movement are actually industry professionals. And in the second hour of today's show, I actually have one of the leading lights in that field coming on, so I do hope you stay for the second hour. I have Richard Gage, AIA, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, coming on for the full hour. And indeed, to demonstrate the degree of established science and highly qualified people that support a new investigation and support the view that the World Trade Center, Twin Towers and Building 7 were brought down by explosive controlled demolition rather than simply as a side effect of being hit by planes, when of course Building 7 was never hit by a plane, so that argument has always seemed a little bit weak. Even the government's position is admittedly weak. They've admitted in their final report on Building 7 that the plane impacts had little to do with the collapse of Building 7. That was their exact words from the NIST report on the collapse of Building 7. The plane impacts had little to do with the collapse of that building. Building 7, the 47-story steel frame skyscraper that fell around about 5 p.m. on the afternoon of September 11, 2001, did not fall as a result of the planes or debris from the planes. It fell as a result of fire, according to NIST. Fire. Thermal expansion. Anyway, do stay with us for the second hour because we will be getting into that topic and Richard Gage will be addressing a lot of very important questions for 9/11 research in the second hour. Now, in the first hour of today's show, I'm going to be covering some Australian topics. I've got a couple of videos to play for you. One is a very, very shocking video clip from the Australian Senate, which shows Senator Scott Ludlam, Green Senator Scott Ludlam, attempting to question the Attorney General, George Brandis, about the deaths of two Australians in a drone strike earlier this year. And the response that he receives is so insulting and so chilling that I think you'll agree that that it is quite something. It demonstrates the degree to which we have become a closed society, to which Australia is now no longer a free society, no longer subject to the principles of freedom, of international law. I mean, two Australians were killed in a drone strike. These are assassinations, right? This needs to be the subject of an investigation. It needs to be there needs to be a diplomatic response from Australia to the United States. This is an illegal act. Anyway, you'll see the completely stonewalling response that that the Attorney General gives to these questions. And hats off to Scott Ludlam for actually, you know, pursuing that and not giving up and continuing to ask the questions. I think it's very important because that goes on record, and then we can see that these people have just stonewalled. And at some point, when reckoning is made, when there is justice, these people will be held to account. I also want to bring you a clip from a new film about the coal seam gas industry, Fractured Country, An Unconventional Invasion. And this is a new one that's just appeared from the Lock the Gate Alliance. So I'll be playing you some clips from that. And we'll also be looking at some Australian news. And in fact, we'll just lead right into that now. I've got an article here that is quoting from a blog by Bob Ellis, who is quite a prominent Labor man, saying that Tony Abbott will be dumped by his own party within a week. Prime Minister Tony Abbott will be thrown out of the top job within a week, according to a former speechwriter for Paul Keating and Kim Beazley. And he says that Mr. Abbott would be overthrown by next Thursday or Friday and replaced by Peter Dutton, Greg Hunt or Malcolm Turnbull. He has also tipped that Joe Hockey could be dumped as treasurer after the government's unpopular budget. Well, actually, let me just briefly refer you to the actual blog here from Bob Ellis. And I'll just quote here from his blog. Why do I say this? Well, it says here in Question Time, Tony was very strange indeed. His face calm, but his voice arching upwards huskily as he asserted repeatedly that not $1 had been cut from health and education. He seemed mad, and it was clear that they'd given up on him, the worst policy salesman in their history. He had lost, in 7 months as a PM, 1.3 million votes and were making frantic plans to be rid of him. Well, that is the opinion of a very party political writer for the Labor Party. Now, the reason why this is very, very important is one that's not going to be prominent in any of the discussion that you're going to see about it in the event that it does happen, but it is the most important factor, and it's one that I've been talking about quite a bit. And I'm actually going to read to you a post that I made on Facebook illustrating what I think is the key point to understand in all of this. This is what I wrote on Facebook a couple of days ago. Dear Facebook friends, I want to warn you against participating in the insidious campaign to depose Tony Abbott. The reason why I call it insidious is because there is a hidden agenda at work, and that agenda has nothing to do with overt reasons which have been given by social engineers, such as GetUp. I believe it's all about preventing the repeal of the carbon tax. The carbon tax repeal is a central non-negotiable policy pledge of the NLP under Tony Abbott, and there are very good reasons why this is so. The main reason is because the vast majority of Australians are against the tax. This fact is central to understanding why Abbott was able to wrest power from Malcolm Turnbull in 2009 and why the Australian people overwhelmingly supported the NLP in the 2013 election. However, as much as the people are against the tax, the global elites, mega corporations and banks are determined to make carbon pricing a global reality. The reasons for this, again, have little to do with the stated aims, but everything to do with creating a mechanism for global governance. A global carbon tax is a mechanism of control, and those who are engineering it regard themselves as the natural rulers of the world. Most of the political elite are firmly on board with the globalist agenda. Abbott is in charge now because he rode in on popular dissent from this agenda. If Abbott goes before the critical repeal vote in the Senate later this year, the tax will stay, and the consequences of that will be truly horrific. Don't say I didn't warn you. Now, I propose to you that, indeed, the unseating of Tony Abbott has been planned all along. It's quite likely, in fact, that it was planned to bring Tony Abbott in on the wave of dissent against the tax, knowing full well that the Liberal Party would reverse their position on it. I know that sounds incredible, and I do hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm proven wrong. But you have to understand that Malcolm Turnbull, who is still the major contender for leader of the party and therefore Prime Minister, if Tony Abbott does go, Malcolm Turnbull is fully on board with carbon pricing. Now, of course, it won't be exactly the same. I think they'll change a little. They'll probably drop the word tax. They'll go back to carbon trading scheme or something like that. It'll be the same thing, just different words. But the establishment is fully behind this. The people are against it. The government came in on the wave of the people's opposition. But as we know, this is a game. And there's increasingly what we've seen this game in politics now, where you have an elected leader who then gets removed from within his own party and replaced by another leader who brings in new policies. And it's a complete subversion of democracy. It's some other weird kind of circus. It's not... It's almost theatre. They have theatre set up for you. So you can see within one government, people coming and going, and you can be on one side or another from within the government. That's the sort of situation we see developing in Australia. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're going to break, and we'll be right back after this. Very, very short break indeed.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Back here with Truth News Radio. You can find us on the web at truthnews.com.au, and you can get our podcasts, and you can see all our interviews going back many years now. And we do a lot of interviews. In the second hour of today's show, I've got a really great interview coming up with Richard Gage, AIA, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. That's going to be a real cracker, and we're going to engage with some tough topics in the 9/11 research field. I'm actually going to specifically address some of the concerns that I know many people have, many listeners have, about the what we feel to be disinformation within the 9/11 truth movement, some of the fringe theories that have recently gained more attention after being held up on the Jesse Ventura TV show, and I'm talking particularly about the directed energy weapons theories of a certain Dr. Wood. I'm going to ask Richard Gage to comment on that. It's very important to highlight the areas in which 9/11 research is, I guess, unanimous, is irrefutable, but it's also very important as a general education to everyone to address some of the other theories which are not adopted by organizations like AE911 Truth and the reasons why. The last thing I'm interested in is getting into any kind of attacks, any kind of personal or motive questioning of people who have something to say about 9/11. But at the same time, I'm absolutely adamant about rejecting faulty information, because this is what my show is about. My show is about exposing disinformation. And as I've said many times before, disinformation appears in many, many guises. Often disinformation comes in the form of people who support you, who support anti-government causes, who are apparently on the side of activists, who have a very great and important truth and justice cause. Disinformation can sneak in that way too. And this type of disinformation is just as bad, and some might say even worse and more toxic, than the mainstream disinformation we have, which gives us false narratives. Because when the disinformation sneaks in the back door and infiltrates your own attempt to bring truth and justice, it undermines what you're doing. And there are people who make this happen. There are people who are engineering it. So it's surprising that it can work as well as it does. I think it points to flaws in human psychology, that we don't understand how susceptible we are to being influenced. We have to be vigilant about it. Being truly independent is the first step. And what I mean by that is, don't let your peer group tell you what to think. Even when your peer group is the best people in the world, you know, the people that you feel allied with, still, don't let them tell you what to think. I know that's hard, and I know everyone's very busy, and they like to get their bullet points from reading something that's easy and quick and something that they trust. And I perfectly understand that. And, you know, that's okay. But every now and then you've got to check those bullet points. You can't just take it verbatim, because any organization can become infiltrated. Any group of people can become infiltrated. And when you're working in a kind of an information war, as we are, the integrity of information is so important. I just can't highlight that enough. The integrity of information is the most critical thing of all. So really, it is worth making a big deal of it and going on and on about it, because when you do present information, when you do have something alternative to offer about any topic, you want it to be irrefutable rather than just, you know, your feeling or somebody's speculation. Even someone you trust, even someone who might be an expert, if it's somebody's speculation, it's not going to go very far. So we'll be returning to more of that in the second hour. Let me now just continue talking a little here about Tony Abbott and the budget, because as I was saying there before the break, Tony Abbott is in big trouble in the polls, largely because of the budget. And I have to say, the budget does have a lot of very cruel and unusual punishments on the Australian people. The GP levy, being the latest one that's come forth, which adds an extra, I think, $8 to every GP visit, which is going to have a very nasty effect on older people, particularly people who are in nursing homes, because, and I'll just read to you here from an article here from the Brisbane Times, and this is talking about some aged care residents who sought the assistance of Clive Palmer. Their nursing home's practice of withholding their aged care pension checks while handing back a modest $15 each for minor luxuries such as chocolates is set to end, but not in a good way. Due to the forthcoming GP co-payment, they were reportedly advised, the remaining $15 would also be withheld to offset expected GP costs. Now, it's actually a $7 payment. Now, that, of course, comes in addition to the debt tax, which is quite significant. And that's actually going to hit everyone who's, you know, well, they say higher income earners, but the way it's actually going to be applied, it's going to be probably anyone earning over 80K. I'm not exactly sure on the details of that, but that was the way I interpreted the information that I have seen. And of course, 80K is certainly not a high salary. It used to be, but these days it's very average indeed. So I'll get more information on that and perhaps discuss it further. But what is clear to me is that Tony Abbott has made himself very, very unpopular. And one has to wonder, one has to speculate here about what is going on. Because we know the powers that be want the carbon tax. We know that. The only way to keep the carbon tax now would be a change of leadership and then a change of policy from within the Liberal Party. And honestly, there are many, many people who will openly say that's what they want. There will be people within the Liberal Party who openly will tell you that's what they want. Many may regard this as a ludicrous conspiracy theory, but many would actually say, no, it's a great idea. You know, do it. Yeah, make it happen. So I'm just going one step further, and I'm suggesting, well, maybe this whole thing was planned from the beginning, is that they set up Tony as a kind of a patsy, knowing that they were going to bring him down, have him bring in all the unpopular policies, get rid of him, bring in someone superficially nicer, but keep the other unpopular policies, but also reverse the policies that they wanted reversed, which is the abolition of the carbon tax. Just a suggestion. I may be wrong. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Thank you. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. I'm going to bring you a clip now from the Australian Senate, from the Senate Legal and Constitutional Affairs Legislation Committee. And this clip features Senator Scott Ludlam questioning the Attorney General, George Brandis, over the deaths of two Australians in a drone strike that occurred earlier this year in 2014. So I'll play that for you now and I'll give you my thoughts on it afterwards.
You have 15 minutes, Senator.
All right, thanks very much. Are we going to get Mr. Wilkins back or should we just start with you, Senator Brandis? I'm going to traverse a couple of areas that might move into the area of responsibility of ASIO and possibly even the Department of Defence, but I'll just... Yeah, I recognise that, Senator Brandis. Thanks heaps. Just recognising it's possibly a bit of a cross-portfolio issue, but I'll be fine if you constrain yourself to your area of responsibility. It's relating to a US drone strike that killed two Australian citizens, or one Australian citizen and one dual citizen, late last year in Yemen, on the 19th of November, I think. Senator Brandis, when did you hear of that strike?
I can't comment on those matters, Senator. You know that.
Why is that?
Because I can't. You know that.
What, you're just refusing to?
Well, I'm not at liberty to.
Why?
Because under the conventions and practices of the Parliament. If you don't know that, Senator, you should, and now you do.
I'm just going to pause it there because I just want to comment on the attitude expressed by the Attorney General, who is answerable to the Australian people. His salary is paid by our taxpayers. And I want you to note that not only will he not answer the question, he will not answer the question as to why he will not answer the question. He will not even refer the questioner to the specific legislation or provisions in law that prevent him from answering the question. He simply will not answer any question. Any question that comes anywhere near this topic is treated with utter contempt, utter disdain. And it is deliberate and arrogant and actually quite evil, I have to say. Now, let me continue. It is quite a disturbing clip that you're about to hear, so I apologise for my own interjections, but you will certainly, I'm sure, feel the same way.
Did you have any role in informing the families subsequent to that strike that killed two Australian citizens?
Me personally, no.
Or the department?
Don't think so.
Mr. Wilkins?
I'm sorry, Senator.
Did the department have any role in informing the families of two Australians killed in a drone strike?
Apparently it was police and consular officials, Senator, not this department.
It was police and consular officials. Are you aware whether the families were sworn to secrecy on being told of those strikes?
No.
No.
I'm not aware.
The Attorney General's department or you, Minister, have any visibility at all of these matters?
I don't quite know what you mean by the term visibility in that context.
You share any responsibility? I presume if I take this up with ASIO, they have a role. Department of Defence presumably
has
a role.
Well, I don't know. We don't comment on these matters, Senator.
Just because you don't feel like it?
No, because, as I pointed out to you, these are national security matters and we don't report to parliamentary committees in this parliamentary committee in open session in relation to that. If you remember the Joint Parliamentary Committee on Intelligence and Security, then they look at these at national security matters with more particularity in camera than this committee can do for obvious reasons.
Okay. Staying away from that particular operation then, what's the Australian government's understanding of the legality under international law of these strikes against various people in various parts of the world?
The breadth of your question makes it impossible of an answer because there are different circumstances in each case, I assume.
Okay, here it goes from the absurd to the ridiculous, where, in fact, he's being asked a direct question about the legality of drone strikes conducted by the United States. Now, rather than using the national security meme as a way of refusing to answer the question, he's pretending that he can't answer the question because the breadth is too wide. But again, he's completely refusing to even address the question. But doing so in an appallingly dishonest way, in a despicable way, that illustrates to me why government has become so toxic. The people who are in power have an elitist mentality. George Brandis is a QC, of course. He is a man who probably considers himself to be in the elite. He's not really. He's just a pawn. But the way the power system seems to work is that it feathers the nest of these types of people and lets them feel all puffed up with their power. And this is how our freedom is subverted. Anyway, I will continue now with the clip from the Australian Senate.
If I may finish my answer, please.
Sure.
Senator Ludlam. Nevertheless, I'm not aware that the Australian government has a view of legality of these matters in any event.
Are you comfortable that they're legal under international law, given that two Australian citizens were blown away in one of these strikes?
Well, I'm not commenting on the matter, Senator.
I'm presuming if the Chinese government had assassinated two Australian citizens, you'd have a view. You'd be putting that out there.
You can assume that, but I'm not expressing any views, Senator.
Remember, this is the Attorney General. This is the top legal representative of our Australian government. He says, I'm not commenting on it. He earlier said he was incapable of commenting on it. Now he just says he's not commenting on it. He's the top guy. And the question was very simple. Are you confident of the legality? Well, if he's not able to comment on it, what does that mean? He couldn't give a yes to that. He could not give an affirmative response to the question about legality. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? Continuing now with the video.
Nor would it be appropriate.
That's fascinating. Does the Australian government have any evidence that these two men were in fact terrorists?
I refer you to my earlier answer, Senator.
Wow. Is the Australian government aware of how many civilians have been killed in these drone strikes in various parts of the world?
I don't think so.
Not interested?
This has nothing to do with Australia, Senator.
Are you aware of whether the Pine Gap base in central Australia plays a central role in the targeting of these strikes?
No, and if I were, I wouldn't be commenting on the matter.
No, but that would be something to do with Australia, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm not aware, and if I were aware, I wouldn't be commenting on it.
Okay. I guess it's better just to not be interested in it at all.
Well, it's probably better to not to ask questions that you know can't be answered in this forum.
You could choose to answer these questions
in
this
forum. No, I couldn't choose to answer these questions in this forum, Senator. And if you don't understand that, you don't understand a pretty important principle that governs the operation of this particular committee.
No, I think I understand it pretty well. I can take these questions up with defence, but did your department take this matter up at all with your counterparts in the US after it came to your attention that Australians were involved?
I would not be disclosing to you or Senator what matters I discuss with my counterparts in the United States.
We'll just leave it there. If that doesn't rile you up, nothing will. With Truth News Radio Australia, we're going to break. We'll be right back for one more segment of this hour, and we'll be back in the second hour with Richard Gage. Great show coming up. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. In the last segment of today's show, I'm bringing you some clips from a new documentary about coal seam gas and fracking in Australia. And this is just fresh off the press. I've only seen this myself today. I hope you enjoy it.
My name's Brian Monk. We live on 5,180 acres. And we moved out there because we love the bush.
Well, I'm Ruth Armstrong and we're at Cecil Plains. We grow crops. This is a cropping farm and this is a cropping district. It is a very rich farming area and I think it's regarded as some of the best farmland in the world.
It's a perfect place to live.
We've got three kids and we're trying to make a living out of farming.
My name is Mabel Quackerud and I'm a Bailey elder from Gladstone area. Country for me is sacred. Curtis Island is in our ancestral grounds. All our ancestors were buried there.
I'm Graham Gibson and I'm here in Broke growing grapes and have been for the last 23 odd years. And we've been since 2004 trying to ensure that our lifestyle, our business, our property values, our environment is saved from being a gas field.
Since coal seam gas came along, I can safely say our life has been devastated, for want of a better description. It's completely shattered any plans and any future that we thought that we had. It's affected our health, it's affected our mental health to no end, and it's also put our entire life into disarray.
Living in a gas field, I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. I honestly would not. This is hell. We don't know what's going to happen.
Having your community in a gas field is a worrying thing, you know.
Here we go. I've never been an activist. I've never been an environmentalist. But it's like this is of a scale that is beyond comprehension. This is Australia.
This is an invasion, and it's an invasion which betrays common sense. This is an invasion of Australia. Australia.
Right across our vast continent, an invasion is taking place. From our precious food bowls in the Darling Downs, Gippsland, the Liverpool Plains, and the rich farmlands of southeast South Australia, to tourist makers like northern New South Wales, the Otway Coast, Queensland's scenic rim, and Western Australia's wildflower country. The gas companies want it all. Our greatest underground water resource, the Great Artesian Basin, is also at risk. As are the drinking water catchments for the Sydney region, which supply over 4 million people. Even our iconic natural and cultural locations are under threat. The Kimberley, Central Australia, Arnhem Land, and the Ningaloo region. It seems that nothing is sacred and nowhere is safe.
I think as a whole, this community naively felt that this area is so special and so important as an agricultural resource. There's no way in the world that there'll ever be mining here. Like, it's just stupid.
In just a few short years, coal seam gas, or CSG, production has transformed the Darling Downs of southern Queensland, one of Australia's most productive farming regions, into an unrecognisable landscape. Some 18,000 wells have been approved, with tens of thousands more planned.
In 2004, the Sydney Gas arrived with a drilling rig, which is the first we knew that there was going to be any drilling up here, because you don't find out until they arrive.
The first easement they wanted to put through our place was diagonally past the front of our house. They only tell you the good part about it until they start, and then you find out that there's pipelines going north, south, east and west, and wherever they feel fit to go.
Representatives of the gas companies, you know when they're lying because their lips are moving. It is all about getting their company onto your property to extract a resource, often at your property's detriment.
Unconventional forms of gas, such as coal seam gas, shale gas and tight gas, differ from natural gas because they're more difficult to extract and can't be developed with conventional processes. Unconventional gas production is highly invasive above and below ground, requiring massive numbers of wells and intrusive extraction methods, such as horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing, or fracking.
This industrialises your region. It's your whole region turns into a factory, a gas factory.
I'll just pause it there, and I do strongly recommend having a look at the documentary. It's only 40 minutes long, but it's extremely well made. And there's a lot of really good illustrations there and diagrams that explain how the fracking system actually works. Now, I just want to draw your attention to what Brian Monk was saying there just before I stopped the video about the way in which communities are being turned into essentially industrialized zones. And these are communities that are farming communities that are doing something very important for the whole country. They're supplying food. But these areas are being transformed into industrial zones. And that in itself is enough to make you realize that there's something very, very wrong here. I mean, let's put aside for a moment all of the specific debates about aquifers and specific health concerns about the leaking of gas and people's water being contaminated with gas and having, you know, flammable water coming out of their taps and all that kind of stuff, right? Just consider what it means that we're accepting a situation where the primary production of food for the country is now coexisting with this massive industrialization, this kind of factory of gas production. Because every industrial process has its risks. And in many cases, we accept that. You know, we accept that a lot of things that go on in factories involve poisonous toxic substances, right? But we regulate it. Governments regulate the behavior of industry to limit the risk to the environment and limit the risk to people's health by dealing with these issues, dealing with the way in which industries dispose of their waste materials, emissions, and all this kind of stuff. But we've now got a situation where the industries have moved right in next door to where people are living in such a way that it will be very difficult to control the effects of any of these pollutants or toxic effects that come from this industry. So intrinsically there's a problem there, isn't there? And how is it that this has come to be normalised? And it has been normalised and it has really taken over. It's become one of the major sources of energy now around the world, particularly big in the US. And it comes at a time when oil production is as high as it's ever been. There's plenty of coal. It's not really because there's a shortage of these other forms of stored energy, coal and oil. What is really going on? I don't fully understand it. One thing I do know is that the fake environmental industry, the fake green lobby, has made it possible for these evil organisations to exist with their obsession about CO2. Because gas does produce less of a greenhouse footprint than oil and coal. Not much less, but it is less. And if that's your major obsession, then you have to live with the consequences of that. If you think that is more important than anything else, because you think the world is going to boil up with global warming, then I guess you have to go along with this. And I do ask those who are in the Greens or in environmental movements to consider what I'm saying and not simply fob it off, not pretend that it's not important, because that's what they tend to do. They tend to say, oh, well, these issues about carbon footprint are not important. You know, we have to get rid of the coal seam gas. They are against it. But then they don't question the agenda, the fundamental belief system that they adhere to that's made this possible. The scare about global warming, the scare about carbon dioxide, which provides the perfect justification for this obscene attack on people's basic lifestyles. We're going to break. I'll be back after the break with Richard Gage, AIA, to talk about 9/11 and the destruction of the World Trade Center. It's going to be a really, really interesting 1-hour discussion, and I do hope you join us on the other side.